We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, everybody. Celtics and Thunder, a potential finals preview going down at the TD Garden on Wednesday night. Here to get you set up, it's Green with Envy. You know the deal. Let's lock in. What up? Welcome into another edition of Green with Envy. We've got ourselves a preview podcast here. Boston Celtics, Oklahoma City Thunder in Boston on Wednesday night. This is your boy Will Weir checking in. Joining me today to help give you the preview that you need, it is the lead writer for Celtics Blog, the leader of the Taylor Gang, the one and only Adam Taylor. Adam, what's popping?
Yo, what's popping, man? What's popping? As you can see, my screen's a little bit flaky. We're having some lighting issues. Need to get that resolved. I blame the dog. Hey, other than that,
this is the downside of content creation, folks. Me and Adam spend, and Greg, we spend 10 to 15 minutes every podcast. How does my camera look? How's the angle? In all reality, we don't give a fuck. We want to talk basketball, but this is the downside of content creation that you don't see is the shaping, the framing, and all the stuff that you don't care about, or you don't care about, but the algorithms care about. So unfortunately, we're forced to care about it. But Adam, enough of that talk. I want to get into this preview because I think this is one of the most fun matchups out there. And especially when you look back on the Celtics season, the game that they played on January 2nd was a pretty influential game, just from the standpoint of it was definitely a game where OKC announced, like, this is not a fluke, right? Like, this team is for real, still vying for the one seed. They're playing in Tuesday night. We're recording this Tuesday afternoon. Tuesday night, they'll be in Philadelphia prior to this game on Wednesday. Celtics magic number to clinch the number one overall seed will be 1 or 2 by that tip-off. So this game could seal the deal, number one seed all the way through to the finals. But when you look at this matchup, Celtics Thunder, what's the first thing that you're looking at when you think of this matchup? What's the first thing you go to?
Where the hell are Boston going to be able to score from? Because that's always the first thing that I go to, is like, where is Oklahoma's defense giving up buckets? Because every team has a compromise that they make with themselves, right? Some teams will let you shoot from free because they want to be able to protect the rim and close down the mid-range. Some teams want to funnel you off the line so you shoot more around the rim or around the mid-range. So that's kind of where I'm at right now, is just like coming into this game. I know everybody wants to hear me talk about how you're going to shut down Shai, how you're going to deal with Chet. And like, we can get to that. But for me at the moment, my number one concern is always, where are your shots going to come from? And right now, it looks like and I'll share these numbers because I do this on the Celtics Chronicles whenever there's a big game. I like to kind of break down the numbers and look where the offense is going to come from. So let me just zoom in here a little bit. Sorry, Will, I'm kind of hijacking this question.
No, you're good.
So if you look here, this is defense. So any number that's, any one that's orange or dark orange is where they're allowing a lot of shots from. Hold on, sorry. Yeah, where they're not allowing a lot of shots from. Anything that's blue is where they're allowing a lot of shots from. So they're allowing a lot of shots on the perimeter. They're trying to restrict people around the rim, and they're clamping in the mid-range a little bit. Right. Most likely, they're trying to stop teams. They're trying to allow teams to shoot the corner free. They're defending the outside of the three-point line quite well, but they're giving up the corner because they're also trying to close in that mid-range area a little bit. But they're doing a really good job. They're first in the league for defending the rim. So that rim pressure that Boston like to generate, they like to attack early, get downhill, and then open up their drive and kick game, which is called like the spray game.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be tough because you're going up against the best rim defense in the NBA right now. They're also one of the best teams at defending the corner free. Now, when you're driving towards the rim and you're looking to kick out, where's the number one option you're kicking to? The corner. So yeah. they're defending at an elite level, two areas where Boston really try and generate their offense from early and often. And that's going to be an interesting battle to me. This is where I think the battle's going to be from the Celtics side. Is like, hey, we like to pressure the rim. We like to drive and kick out to the corners. We've got Drew Holiday, who's one of the best corner free shooters in the NBA right now. And we've got Jaylen Brown, who's one of the best slashers, rim finishers, one of the most explosive play finishers in the NBA. They're going to come up against a team that are designed to stop both of those things from happening. So where do we counter? Now, if we go back and look at the mid-range game, the Thunder are doing a really good job at limiting teams shooting in the mid-range. They're eighth in the NBA for mid-range frequency, which means there's only seven teams doing a better job of limiting mid-range shots than the Thunder right now. So that's going to force Boston into being the version of Boston that we don't want them to be, which is a predominantly three-point heavy team with very little penetration and very little post action. So that's where the chess battle is going to start for me. And that's going to be kind of the number one thing I'm looking at over the first 10 to 25 possessions is how are Boston getting into their offense? Are they settling? Are they trying to work into find gaps? And how does that chess battle start from that point?
Yeah, I mean, you think about Oklahoma City, and I like that you started here instead of the obvious, because you're right. The first place I probably would have gone to is that Shea question. But I do think that when you look at this Thunder team, and they have elite perimeter defense. Like, when you look at SGA, you look at Dort, who's just, you know, a brick shithouse. Like, he's one of the thickest dudes in the NBA and can move his feet laterally. Then you look at Jalen Williams, who, that's a guy I want to talk about, J-Dub, whatever the first J-Dub. I forget what the difference, how do you separate the two J-Dubs again, but it's the tough. The starter J-Dub, I want to talk about him. He's an excellent defender. And then you got Chet at the rim. So you have excellent perimeter defense, and I hasn't even mentioned Kayson Wallace off the bench, their rookie, who is phenomenal on the perimeter as well. So they have a lot of really good perimeter defenders. And I mean, to a degree, that kind of sounds like the Celtics defense, right? Like, you have a bunch of good perimeter defenders. You then have, whether it's, you know, KP at the rim, like, it, there's a lot of similarities between these teams. One of the differences is going to be, how can the Celtics, I think for me, how can the Celtics get mismatches to take advantage of their height? Right? Because that's one of the areas where the Thunder are going to struggle, is that they're not a great rebounding team and they're just smaller. They're long, but they're not tall. And so how can you take advantage with getting KP to a mismatch somewhere, either on the nail or the free throw line extended or in the post, so that you can take advantage of them having to send a double team? And like you said, not falling into the trap of shooting, you know, the out too many threes that they're trying to get you to shoot, right? Not playing into their game plan, which, you know, kind of the gift and the curse of the Celtics is that sometimes they might play into your game plan, and sometimes it might work out for the Celtics because they're that good at shooting.
They'll just cook you at what you want them to not cook you. Like, you're forcing them away,
right?
Yeah, of course. I think that when you look at the opportunity for that to happen, that's great. But this close to the postseason, against a team that you could potentially, I'm not there yet with Oklahoma, but you could potentially see them in the NBA Finals.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this is all about that chess game. It's all about knowing how they want you to play, knowing how they're looking to defend you, and then finding ways to do to them what they're trying to stop you from doing. Because right. That, to me, is always the battle, right? You don't want us to attack the rim. You don't want us to shoot corner threes. Okay, cool. So how can we do that? Because once we break you there and force you to adjust, now we're in control of the entire game. We control the tempo. We've made you adjust everything. And now you're in that battle to try and get back on a level footing before you can even take that step and be a step ahead again. And that battle, to me, if you can win that early, you kind of take control of the game and you can control how the runs go from there, how you respond mm-hmm. to them, because they can't default back to their default defense. They can't default back to their default defense because you've destroyed that. You've proven that that doesn't work.
This is the chess move in a series, right? Now they have to adjust. What's the adjustment that you have? And that's what, you know, we'll have to see. But let's flip this for a second. Let's look at this from Oklahoma City on offense and a Celtics defensive perspective. You know, last time they played, one of the main strategies the Celtics had was, you know, putting Porzingis on their non-shooter in their starting offensive lineup, which was Josh Giddey. And Josh Giddey hit four threes, and Josh Giddey can do that. You know, over his last, I think I had it pulled up here earlier, over his last like 15 games or so, you know, he's shooting 41% from three, not a high volume, 3.9, but 41% on, you know, roughly four shots a game. Like, he can burn you on that. So, you know, when you look at this game, Adam, from the Celtics defensive point of view, and we can talk about, you know, guarding Shea, and the Celtics threw a lot of bodies at Shea last game, and really, you know, until Tatum in the fourth, didn't really feel like they found much success with guarding Shea. How do you think the Celtics attack defensively the Oklahoma City offense?
Okay, so let's look at what the offense does first of all. And if you like these type of breakdowns, sign up to the Celtics Chronicle, CelticsChronicle.com, because I do these for every big game and I go a little bit more in depth. I don't know why someone's at my door. Bear with me, and we're going to have to pause the recording. So let's look at how this goes from the offensive side of things, right? So we'll start with frequency. They are a very mid-range frequent team. And I like this because they're playing out of the nail a lot. They're playing off the elbows in that mid-post. And then creating offense out of there, they'll either shoot or they'll create some gravity, right? From the perimeter, what you'll see is they're not exactly a high-volume team, same at the mm-hmm. rim. But if you look, this is pretty even. It's 33.1% at the rim, 34.8% from perimeter, 32.1% from mid-range. So what that tells me is they don't over-focus anywhere. It's very balanced across the board. And I think this is a good thing from Mark Daigneault because he has actions on all three levels and they consistently iterate between those three levels in terms of their offense and where they like to generate their shots. So what that leads to then is a pretty efficient, if we look at how this team looks offensively, 67.5% finishing around the rim. That's about middle of the pack in the league. 47.3% from mid-range, top three in the NBA for mid-range conversion, first in the league for their three-point shooting, especially from non-corner, top 10 in terms of shooting from the corner. So they're playing a very even-keeled game in terms of where their shots come from, and they're crushing it everywhere apart from mm-hmm. the rim. You know what I mean? So how do you defend that? Well, you try and funnel them to the rim. Right. That's pretty much what you're going to need to do. You're going to want to run them off the three-point line. You're going to want to send gap help when they attack the closeout. So you're denying that mid-range pull-up. So it's going to need to get some gap help, some nail help. And you want to funnel them into your Kristaps Porzingis, your Al Horford, your Jason Tatum, who's rotating over from the weak side as a help defender. And you're going to want to really force them to shoot around the rim. More shots you can get them to take there because it's the one area they don't, like, air quotes, excel. Based on what we're seeing right now, that to me is going to be where that chess game is on the other side. Boston are going to want to funnel them off the three-point line, send help in the mid-range, and make them a two-point layup and dunk team. It's going to be the main tank.
So who do you think, because I think the head of the snake for this team is obviously SGA, right? And let me preface this for those listening. You know, we're recording this Tuesday afternoon. We don't know what the injury report will be, who will be in and out officially yet. OKC is in Philly Tuesday night. As of the time of this recording, both SGA and J-Dub, the starter Jalen Williams, are questionable to play in that game. So we'll have to see what that injury report looks like. But let's assume Shea, who just came back on Sunday, hit a game winner in New York in Madison Square Garden. Let's assume that he's playing in this game, Adam. Who do you think draws that assignment? Because in the first matchup, Drew got the bulk of the assignment, and SGA kind of cooked him. Jaylen Brown had some moments where it was, you know, a little bit up and down, but SGA had his way. Tatum had probably the most success out of those three that were the main defenders against Shea in that game in early January. When you look at the way that this defense is playing, and specifically, I think Jaylen Brown's the most interesting candidate to me just because of his vocalness about wanting to take on those top assignments each night, whether it's Dame Lillard or if it's Giannis, or if it's Zion, you know, not necessarily saying, hey, I don't care if it's a big guy, I want him. Or if it's a little guy, Jalen just wants all the smoke right now. And Jalen's very happy to sit there and tell you that he wants all the smoke and he wants to be an all-NBA defender. And he's been backing it up to his credit. He's been 100% backing it up. How do you see Mazzulla drawing up those assignments for SGA in this game?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, so I'm going to start this by saying what I always say. When it comes to a star-level talent, like an All-NBA first-team guy, All-NBA second-team guy.
Which is SGA.
Yep. My outlook has always been you contain them as best as you can, but you shut down everybody else around them. So the game plan to me is how do we keep Giddy quiet? How do we keep Chet quiet? How do we keep Williams quiet? How do we keep Wallace quiet? And then we live with whatever SGA does, right? You live with it because it's the same as if Tatum's on a heater. There's no point stopping it. You live with it and you minimize the impact elsewhere.
How do you make their life as difficult as possible and limit whatever opportunities?
And that's just for someone like SGA that's really quick. He's put on some muscle. A lot of that's just going to be sending gap help early and stunting on him, making that dribble difficult to keep a live dribble, making him pick up the ball a bit earlier, showing bodies, getting physical. I would expect Jaylen Brown to pick up the beginning start of this assignment. And then you kind of go from there, right? Like, having a great game against Zion does not mean you're going to have a great game against SGA, because we're talking right. Two completely different players with completely different skill sets. I think Brown has the athleticism and the explosiveness where he should be able to stay in front or at least down the hip of SGA. One thing we're going to want to see from Jalen, and I think he's been quite good at this year, but if he genuinely wants to take on these lead guard defense assignments, he needs to take a leap on screen navigation. I think he's been solid, but he needs to be exceptional, because once the postseason starts and there's 2, 3, 4 screens being thrown at you and you're having to weave in and out of them, it's tough. I think Jalen starts.
And I think that's probably why Holiday got the main assignment to
begin
with.
Because his screen navigation is so good.
Yeah.
And I think that this is where I'm going to go. Like, I do think it's going to be a Jalen, Drew, and JT kind of tandem where we're going to switch. We're going to anticipate your actions. We're going to anticipate where your screens are coming from. We're always going to have a Tatum or a Holiday. And this is where D. White being on the opposite side of the floor is so clutch, because it's like, shit, even if you go the opposite way and you get switched onto D. White, right. It's tough. We're making it tough on you. So that's going to be, for me, I think you start with Jalen Brown and then you iterate through the guys. And if one starts working, maybe you stick man-to-man. And you go from there. But for me, you just contain him and you try and shut down everybody else. And that's difficult against Oklahoma because of Giddy's playmaking.
Yeah, exactly. And they have another person that they can just give the ball to and can create. And so that's where it becomes, do you leave Giddy, or, you know, how do you handle that scenario? But I'm curious, Adam, just how much of the Thunder have you watched this year? Have you had a chance?
Not as much as what I'd like.
What has stood out to you when you've watched this team? I'm curious.
Play calling versatility. I really like some of the stuff they've run. Mm-hmm. I think it's quite fluid. I think it's quite modern, very modern offense, very modern defense. SGA's ability to just penetrate off the dribble or penetrate as an off-ball cutter is insane. I think Chet has really opened things up. Chet has had a very similar impact on Oklahoma as what KP has had on Boston, just in terms of he's just opened the floor up. He's made their spacing completely different level. And he does kind of give them that same similar X factor. I think as much as Giddy's been negatively, well, as much as him, I'm trying to say this as politically correct as possible, for everything that he's gone through off the court with everything that he's done, and you know, and obviously that's some bullshit what he did, if he did it. Like, there's a lot of feelings there.
There's a lot of ambiguity.
Yeah, and I'm not here to speak on that, but for everything that he's gone through off the court, I think he's taken a bit of a jump in terms of development. Like, he's a really, really good player. Had a triple-double against, was it against New York on Saturday?
I heard something crazy. Like, I think he's played there three times and had three triple-doubles or something to that effect.
Like, when Giddy was coming out of the draft, he was my kind of draft darling. Like, I'm a big fan of what Giddy does on the floor. And I think that he's kind of such a difficult guy to guard because of the way he plays and how he unlocks everything else. So that's kind of stood out to me as well. So, and then obviously Williams is just really fun to watch.
So I want to talk about Jalen Williams just for a second, because he's the guy for me that I don't think until recently I've started to really appreciate just how good this guy is. And, you know, you referenced that Knicks game. I rewatched the end of that game the other night, and Shai hit the big shot, but Shai had 19 points in that game. That was kind of a down game for Shai. It was obviously his first game back after missing a few with an injury, but Jalen Williams was the one carrying them in that fourth quarter. And when you look at this team, number one, how young they are and how composed they are is extremely impressive. This team does not seem to be rattled, and case in point, they're the number one offensive rated team in the clutch in the entire NBA. And when you dig into that and you look at their big three of SGA, Jalen Williams, and Chet Holmgren, let me just read you their clutch time stats this year. SGA, 57% from the field, 35% from three, 88% from the line. Jalen Williams, 69.2% from the field, 58.3% from three, 82% from the line. Chet Holmgren, 54% from the field, 46.7% from three, 75% from the line. And that's they're the ones that are touching the ball late in the game, that are making all the decisions. Like, from three really young guys in this league, like SGA is what, in his fourth or fifth year? He's the veteran in this group. Like, those are insane numbers. Once again, Jalen Williams is shooting 70% on 40 shots. He's had 39 shots. Jalen Brown's got 40 shots in the clutch. So it's not like Jalen Williams is a small sample size. Like, these guys all have very high sample size statistics to look from. And so in the clutch, to see the way that these young guys perform, like, that is something that kind of blows my mind with this team. It makes me, despite some of my reluctancy on the things that they lack in terms of veteran savvy, and we talked about them being a relatively small team, the fact that they're this composed, this young, and execute at this much of a high level in high leverage situations, like, it makes me hesitant to write this team off. And Jalen Williams, like I said, I think that's going to be the guy that I'm looking at to see, like you said, SGA, we got to contain him. We got to make his life difficult, and you need to shut down the guys around him. For me, I'm starting to look at, all right, who's taking the Jalen Williams assignment, and what does that look like in this game? I think that's really going to be the number one thing that I'm looking for, is how the Celtics address Jalen Williams on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, and that's going to be another one of those challenges in terms of who's one of your better off-ball defenders, right? Because he's going to be off-ball. They're going to try and run actions to get him onto the ball and force unfavorable switches from Boston. So who can you have as your two off-ball defenders, where you've got one guy that can be on him to begin with, and then one guy to scram out the mismatch once the switch happens, if Boston goes to a scram-style defense? So Derek White could be the guy, but he's a bit small. I feel like Tatum's best used as a helper in these situations, but he can play off-ball defense. He's really good at playing the passing lane, can top lock well, has good size, good strength. There's an option. Obviously, you could always go with like a Tillman type early sub in, just to have that versatility on the perimeter that can switch and bang on drives and stuff as well. I think that the Celtics have got a really good rotation of defensive pieces that all excel differently, but Williams is going to be one of those guys that really tests that starting five, if we're talking about the starting Williams, obviously. Because I just think that most of the on-ball defense is going to be thrown at Shai, like at SGA, but the problem is those on-ball defenders are also Boston's best off-ball defenders. Right. So it's going to be a really tough kind of line to walk unless you start incorporating Tatum more into this off-ball kind of chaser role, which isn't really where he excels.
You mentioned Tillman. Do you think this is more of a Tillman game than a Luke game?
Maybe. I think that Luke,
I feel like you could make a case for it either way. It's a little interesting, right?
I've really liked what Luke's been giving lately. I think Tillman hasn't really impressed me the way
footing.
I was. No,
same.
Not the way
I was hoping. I was thinking about that the other night too. There's moments where you're like, that's what I was looking for. But then there's other moments where it just hasn't clicked yet. And the fact that he's willing to take those threes, but he's just not hitting them, is certainly a detriment on the offensive side. Yeah. And the defense has been definitely, you can see the thought process of where he should be fitting in, but it hasn't quite matched up with the actuality has not matched up quite as seamless as I would have thought with the theoretical.
Yeah, in his defense, I think his minutes have been quite inconsistent. I think it's been hard for him to find a rhythm. Boston's defense is quite fast-paced in the way they execute, the way they switch on. Everything's done quite rapidly. So I think Tillman's just struggling to keep pace, like in terms of thought process, like, you know, what do I call it now? Processing speed, defensive processing speed. I think he's struggling there a bit, so processing speed. That's an issue. I think offensively, against who did they play? I'll just write takeaways on it earlier. Against the Hornets, he had some nice duck-ins into the post. I think he made himself available, sealed off his man well. That was probably some of the best off-ball offensive positioning we've seen from him since he's been in Boston. And he did it against Grant Williams, that was having a night on both sides of the floor. But in general, I'm a lot more comfortable with Luke right now. I think Luke does a lot of things very well. And I think that his size, as you alluded to at the start of the episode, is an advantage that you can really
work. It's a difference maker in this. It just depends, you know, if he's going to get burnt offense or on the defensive side or not because of that. But I think this leads into at least the last thing that I'm looking for in this game is, I think my prediction for this is going to be one of the last games we see the Celtics treat it like a playoff tune-up. I think by the time we get to next week, we play Milwaukee, we play the Knicks, I'm kind of hoping maybe we see either three guys in, three guys out, or maybe we see the starters for a half, and then it's all about rest at this point. Like I said, we're a game or two away from literally having nothing else that we can do in the regular season to achieve the goals that you need to. The one seed in the East is locked up. The one seed overall in the NBA should be locked up in the next couple of days. And so after that, it's just getting to that finish line. And so for me in this game, the last thing I really kind of want to see, and I know Mazzulla has been very open about this is the benefit of us being this one seed so early. We can experiment and play around. And so I don't want to read too much into it, but I think back to that last matchup against OKC, and this is something that also stood out in the series of Denver games, is winning the non-Jokic, and in this case, the non-SGA minutes. And I remember distinctly looking back at, and I went back and double-checked it, the game against the Thunder in January. It was 98-86 entering the fourth. Thunder were up by 12. This is one of the few games where the Celtics were trailing by a good portion and throughout this game consistently, right? And the Celtics made a really strong comeback to even have a chance, but had to be perfect, and Porzingis had that big toe on the line and ultimately weren't able to pull it off. But they're down 12 going into the fourth. SGA and Chet in this scenario both sat until 6:04. So basically, you get an entire half a quarter without two of their three best players. And the score by the time they checked back in was 110-95. Celtics lost 12-9 in that stretch. You absolutely cannot have that happen, especially when you're trying to make a comeback. But as you're trying to take advantage of those moments, and part of that was the lineup that Mazzulla started that fourth quarter with had Al, Luke, Jaylen Brown, Holiday, and Pritchard. And this reminded me of those non-Jokic moments in the most recent game, where in that fourth quarter, no Jokic, but you still had the Tillman and Horford lineup. And that feels like a failure of Joe to kind of adjust in the moment to knowing that you got to get some points on the board. And that double big lineup was great when you had, you know, Jokic out there and you're trying to not get caught on too many severe mismatches. He's a mismatch for everybody, but too many severe mismatches. And so I'm going to be kind of curious to see how Joe, especially if the game is tight late, handle some of those rotation minutes to try to take advantage of star players being off the court. Because I do think in these high leverage moments, those have been a couple missed opportunities that I think we could have had more. I'm trying to think of the right way to phrase this. Lineups with a higher ceiling than what we had out there for those moments that could have helped the Celtics catch some ground or put some ground, depending on the situation in those moments.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like there's an overcommitment to size with these double big lineups. I feel like defensively, when it makes sense, you go to them, but you lose a significant amount of tempo when you run those double big, especially when you're like a Luke and Al. Like the tempo of the actual like transition play, the way the ball pops around, you lose that. You've got spacing, but it's not spacing with gravity the same way as if you went a little bit smaller and had Hauser and Pritchard on the floor. You want, when it's these non-star minutes, you want to space the floor, play with pace, and just drive and kick, pressure, pressure, pressure. And I think that in these non-SJ minutes, and we've seen Mazzulla go to this a little bit recently, but just not against high-level teams, which we're hoping we'll see tomorrow, we are seeing more, hey, there's a Pritchard and Hauser two-man game that looks pretty good right now. There's a Hauser and Luke Kornet two-man game, a Pritchard and Kornet two-man game. There's two-man games off that Stay Ready group that are all blending together right now that we can play at a really good pace. We can hit pitcher heads. We can play out of the pinch post where it's an empty side with someone on the block. We can attack empty side actions with drag screens. We can play at a pace because we've got, not only do we have the spacing, which would be there with a double big because Kornet does his playmaking thing and his screening thing, Al can hit the three, but we've got gravity with this spacing now because we've got Hauser running sprinting to fill one corner. We've got Jaylen Brown on the floor that's a threat from everywhere. You've got Pritchard that can sprint and fill the slots. You've got whoever's going to fill the opposite corner can probably nail the three. And that gravity really stretches the defense out. And then you play with pace and you run these guys off the floor. And then when the stars come back in, you go back to being big. You become more physical. You take that tempo down a notch, but you keep that spacing to really space guys out and attack offensively. I think that's what we've seen recently with that second unit when Mazzulla's gone to it. And as you said, if you're trying to win minutes when stars sit, that would be my de facto kind of blueprint that we can then kind of go flowchart off of, right? Does this work? No, right, we do this. And then we can flowchart from there. But my de facto would be start getting more shooters and more pace on the floor. We don't need to be extra big at the while losing tempo.
Right.
When trying to attack while stars aren't on the floor. It just doesn't make sense to me. You want that tempo.
Yeah, I agree, man. So I think we'll be interesting. This will be, like I said, I think this is the last playoff tune-up that I'm expecting to see. We'll see. Celtics like to play every game to win, so we'll have to see how that plays out. But like I said, there's literally nothing to play for after this night, so I'm hoping that this is the last real playoff tune-up that these Celtics will be given before it just becomes kind of who's in, who's out, we're resting, and we're getting set for that first round of the playoffs. Anything else that you wanted to cover on this preview here?
That's me good, brah. I'm good.
I think we're good here, man. I think this should be a great game. I'm excited for it. As always, Adam, it is a pleasure checking in with you here. For those of you listening, remember, day after this game, Thursday, we're going to be back, three-man weave. We got ourselves a live stream, 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Central. Come lock in with you guys. We'll have a recap of the game. So likely no game recap that night. TBD. We might still do one depending on how the game goes. If not, Greg and I might just save our thoughts for when the three-man weave get together the next day. So make sure you come rock with us. Bring some questions for the stretch run here as we count down these the final days, man. And also, it's Mike Gorman's final days too here. We got the last couple of games here. Drew Carter done for the season. Celtics have one road game left. That's going to be on national TV in Milwaukee. So we said our farewells to Drew Carter on the broadcast. Hopefully we might have him back on this podcast before the postseason starts. So we'll work on getting his thoughts on this team. But yeah, it's the end of the road here, Adam. So we'll be checking in with you guys. Come lock in. Live stream Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Central. We'll see you guys later. Enjoy some Black Sheep Optimism on the way out.
Yo, I flipped it like Simone Biles.
Miles from a throne, see me smile cause I found peace.
While I'm at home,
I rhyme a little bit different, got that sound of my own.
And with the time limit, I'm shifting, man, I'm proud that I've grown. It's that right time to rise to the occasion. Put the pen up on the paper and flip the occupation. I'm getting motivated, it's goals to be created. I'm making this a moment, there's no time for waiting. See the city from a bird's third eye word. I learn to observe what the many won't find. Don't mind me, flying to the moon, doing fine. See, sliding on the ground, I'll take another cup of rice, please God. I lost a dollar and a dime piece. They found me on the floor while I was trying to find me.
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing. But you know better.
and your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is four missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour 3-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour Foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.